With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Championship Roundtable podcast. I'm your host, James Vickers. You can reach us on the show at EPL Index on Twitter. And you can follow me on my personal Twitter at @_JamesVickers.
Hello, I'm Simeon Pickup. I'm the editor of the Tile West End. You can reach me on Twitter at @BoxRoyal, and you can read the Tile West End on the website. It's very good.
Hi, I'm Andy Buckley-Taylor, representing Derby County on the podcast. You can find me on Twitter at BuckTaylor64, and I also write a blog for the Derbyshire Times group of newspapers.
Yeah, cheers for joining me today, guys. It's nice to actually get back to Championship football after the international break. It's the second one of the season now, so, you know, looking forward to getting back in talking about our teams. We'll start with you first, Simeon. Tricky game on paper going away to Leeds. Sort of talk us through it and sort of any news that came out of Reading over the international break.
Yeah, it was a really good game for us. We'd had a pretty poor run of form going into the international break. I think we'd only drawn one of the three going into it. We were struggling for goals. We were struggling to defend as well. But over the international break, Stan must have taken things back to basics. We never played 4-4-2 under him at all before the Leeds game, but that's what he went for up at Elland Road, and it worked really well. A much simpler formation, much simpler setup, very compact behind the ball, that kind of two banks of four to really make it hard for Leeds to attack. And then going forward, we were much more counter-attacking. It was much more of a typical kind of traditional Reading performance rather than a possession-based kind of tactics that Stan usually likes. And it worked really well. Negated Leeds very well, restricted them to not particularly good chances, and on the day we deserved to win. Had some good chances ourselves and got lucky with a very poor penalty from Pablo Hernandez right in injury time. But on the whole, we deserved to get the 3 points. I'm delighted by it.
Yeah, I sort of watched the highlights back on the Football League show, and it seemed to me that you sort of, in a way, going back to like the Reading of last season, sort of making it difficult for teams, and then with the penalty save at the end as well, you sort of had that look, which you sort of haven't really been getting this season. Is that sort of a fair reflection of how the game was?
Yeah, I'd say so. In terms of last season, there were only a few games when we were good at going away and keeping clean sheet against some of the best sides in the league. I think it only really happened once with a 2-0 win up at Sheffield Wednesday. But it was certainly reminiscent of that dogged fighting spirit that we saw last season and hadn't seen this season. So it's great to see that Stan's got a slightly different formula to get us through those tough games. Which, and to be honest, we weren't really expecting anything from the trip to Leeds. We were just hoping to maybe get a point. So to come away with not only a win, but a clean sheet as well, is a massive boost going on for the rest of the season.
Yeah, sort of moving on to Derby now, Andy. Obviously, you didn't play Saturday, but had the game yesterday against Nottingham Forest, the Brian Clough Trophy. Sort of talk us through the game and what were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I'm happy now that win means we leapfrog above them in the table with the game in hand. And hopefully now, it gives us a springboard to get going for the season. If we win our game in hand, and I don't like looking at things like that because points on the board better, but the game in hand, which was the postponed game against Ipswich, if we win that, we're 1 point out of the top six. So can't grumble too much.
Yeah, you mentioned there about sort of that win hopefully giving you a springboard now to push on. Obviously, it's been a tricky start to the season, and I think before yesterday, I think you'd drawn your last three league games. Is that sort of what was needed in the sense of sort of kicking on now, big derby win to sort of get the momentum rolling and mount a push for the playoffs?
Yes, yes, it is. I mean, we started pretty slow. We've been hit and miss. A couple of very good results. Preston was one, and also the Hull City one. But we've had some very poor ones, like away at Sheffield United and away at Bristol City. I think the introduction of Joe Ledley into the midfield has helped stabilise the team a bit. But yesterday, when you beat your biggest rivals, you know, what better way than to, you know, look forward to the games coming up?
Yeah, definitely. And I can see you sort of really starting to kick on now. And I do think you'll be in and around the playoffs come the end of the season. So sort of looking forward to see how you progress on now. But sort of moving on to Preston, it was a trip down to the capital for us, to Fulham. Over the last couple of years, it's not been sort of the happiest place for us to go, Fulham and the capital in general. We never really seem to get any decent results there. And at half-time on Saturday, I thought that look was starting to change. We're 2-0 up, completely battered Fulham in the first half. Jordan Hugill and Shawny Maguire were absolutely fantastic. Maguire in particular, getting a goal and an assist in the first 25 minutes. And then we get to the half-hour mark, and he comes off with what looks like a hamstring injury, and the game sort of really changed from there on out. We brought on Josh Harrop, who they're both forward players, but not able to do the same job. Harrop isn't blessed with that sort of lightning-quick pace that Maguire is, and it did affect us going forward. We seem to run out of ideas, really, which is a little bit of a concern, but we've been scoring goals sort of quite easily over the last few weeks. So unless that trend carries on over the next few games, there's not too much to worry about. But going into the second half, obviously Maguire's gone off injured. Ben Pearson, not injured, but it's his first game back, so he got subbed off as well. And after that, we kind of sort of rolled over and let them sort of come onto us, really. They got back into it with a penalty with about 15 minutes to go, and then with virtually the last kick of the game, the main talking point where, and it was horrible, I was saying to the guys off sort of recording, sat at completely the opposite end to the sort of where it happened, you can see exactly what's coming. It's a long ball really to nothing that Fulham's, I think, centre-back had hit upfield, was barely getting into the area, and Chris Maxwell, for you know whatever reason, decides that he's going to come and try and claim it, gets there and then drops it, and Fulham's right back, I think it was Odoi, scores a tap-in with virtually the last kick of the game. There was barely any time to kick off again afterwards, which, you know, was a real sucker punch for us because of how well we played in the first half. But as I said on Russ's Fulham podcast, who is on here sometimes on the Friday, that, you know, I would have taken a point if you'd have offered it to me before the game. So I can't be too downbeat, although, you know, it's 2 points dropped rather than a point gained, even though it's a difficult place to go, Fulham. But, you know, we played well, and there's positive signs to take from the game. Can't really sort of get on Maxwell's back too much because he's been absolutely fantastic for us this season and last, and it's that style of play and his sort of fearlessness almost to come and claim the ball and dictate his box that, you know, over the course of the season will win us more points than it costs us. So sort of no arguments on my end really, although we should have, you know, getting two hands on it rather unchallenged, should have definitely held on to it. And, you know, I'd be sort of singing his praises now for what, like an amazing sort of bit of goalkeeping to come out and claim the ball in the last minute. But, you know, it wasn't to be, and a point away at Fulham is still a good point. We're still in the playoffs. There was sort of a few favourable results with other teams in the playoffs, so we ended up, I think, moving up a place, which, you know, is good for us. We still only lost one league game all season, and it's still better than I thought we would have done sort of at this stage when asked at the start of the season. So need to be careful not to be too downbeat by it, but, you know, that just shows really how far we've come under Alex Neil so far this season. But I've sort of touched on it with Maxwell and Maguire a little bit. I just wanted to ask the two of you, sort of, for your team's point of views, who impressed and disappointed for you this weekend? Start with you first on this one, Simeon, although I'd imagine it'll be hard for you to choose someone who disappointed with sort of a fantastic win.
In terms of impressed, I'd have to say Leandro Bacuna, actually, who was a bit of a utility man in his days at Villa, although he usually impresses in centre of midfield. But what we did on Saturday was to bring him in at right back because we're missing left backs at the moment. So we shifted Gunter over to the left and brought Bakuna in at right back. It's not really a position that he's played for us yet, but he did very well in it. And I think he got into the EFL team of the week, put in a fantastic challenge in the second half to deny what would have been a sure goal from one of the lead strikers. So I'm very impressed with him. As you say, there's not really anyone that I can pick out for a negative, to be honest. At an absolute push, I might say Sonny Aluko, who didn't have a bad game, but for someone who came in for a lot of money in the summer, we haven't really seen consistently creative performances from him. He got a couple of assists before the international break, but there's never really been any game where he's... stood out in terms of making a lot of chances, and it was the same thing on Saturday up at Leeds. Luckily it wasn't a problem, although I'm probably being quite harsh on him, so sorry Sonny.
Yeah, and the same question to you really, Andy, and again, you know, winning the derby game, I'd imagine you'll be sort of pushed for people who are disappointed.
Yeah, to be quite honest, I couldn't pick out a player who disappointed me from yesterday. I think the whole team took to the task well, and they all played well. When you're looking about who shone, Tom Lawrence had a good game. Matty Vidra, obviously, he didn't stop running the whole of the game. David Nugent also had a good game. But for me, the player that shone is a player who, for quite a while now, he's been on the receiving end from the Boo Boys. And he came into the game yesterday, didn't stop running, played really well. And it's really great to say that Johnny Russell looks like the player of two seasons ago. He was obviously fired up for the game. Like I said, he ran his legs off. He was there all over the pitch. He was playing down the right wing as opposed to Tom Lawrence was playing down the left. Gave us some good options, put some good passes in, and I'm delighted that you know, he's found some form. And, nobody would have enjoyed that victory yesterday more than Johnny Russell. He was one of the heroes from a few years ago when we beat them 5-0. And I'm absolutely delighted to see Johnny hit form again.
Yeah, and sort of with Preston, I've already sort of touched on it, but Maguire stood out for me again. He's been fantastic since he's come in, and it's... sort of quite gutting that he has got this hamstring injury now. I think it is a combination of him coming off the back of a long sort of season in the League of Ireland, which obviously he's played predominantly sort of over the summer. So he hasn't really, you know, had an off season. He's come straight in, and then straight away he's found himself in the Ireland squad as well, playing international football. So it was kind of coming, although you never want to sort of wish an injury on anyone. I do think it might be a blessing in disguise for him, you know, a couple of weeks off. We've got players who can come in and step in the attacking areas. It is quite an area of the pitch that we are quite blessed in at the moment. And I do think the couple of weeks off, you know, just to get his feet up and recharge the batteries more than anything, will probably do him sort of a lot of good in the long run, because the championship season, sort of as we all know, is a long season. And especially coming now over the winter months, it's going to be crucial sort of squad rotation and keeping players fresh and fit. So while it is gutting to lose him, especially with Wolves away next weekend, we've got a really done with him there. I do think it will be a blessing in disguise, and once he comes back, he'll be eager to impress again, and that can only benefit the team. As far as disappointments, obviously, sort of the easy one to go with is Maxwell, but I've said sort of my piece on him already. I think given that he did drop that, it's wrong to sort of criticise him too harshly. But there were sort of other players in the game, Hugill, and even though Hugill scored, he missed a couple of sitters that you'd expect him to score. Alan Brown missed a one-on-one, and if either of them took any of those chances away, that sort of Maxwell drop at the end doesn't matter as much. So it's hard to criticise Maxwell. Obviously, the fingers will be pointed at him, but I think he'll recover from that. And, you know, he's a fantastic keeper, and I wouldn't change him or sort of have him any other way. He's one of those keepers who, you know what you get with him. He does have a mistake in him, but over the course of the season, that style of play is going to win you, sort of, as I said earlier, more points than it'll lose you. I just wanted to quickly touch on, obviously, it's been highlighted by Leeds over sort of the last week or so. I think probably about 2 or 3 weeks ago before the international break, we were singing their praises, saying, you know, they're top of the table, look the team to beat. And I think it's a sign of how tight the division is this season that, you know, one or two bad results and they now find themselves in sixth, sort of barely inside the playoffs. Since the start of the season, obviously, we've had time to sort of assess most teams now and the table's starting to take shape. Is there anyone in particular that surprised you sort of in a positive way or negatively, where you thought their position would be different to what it is now? I'll start with you first on this, Simeon. Is there any sort of team that's taken you by surprise so far this season?
I think everyone in the top six, to be honest. If you'd asked me before the start of the season if the likes of Cardiff, Sheffield United, Bristol City would be in the top six, I wouldn't have believed you, to be honest. And I think it continues last season's trend of teams who people didn't really expect to be doing very well, overachieving and doing really well. You had likes of Reading, Fulham and Huddersfield doing really well last season against expectations, and it's carrying on this season. A bit of a left field one here. I'm also a bit surprised that Wolves are doing so well, actually. And that seems a bit of an odd comment considering how much they've spent. But I think considering how much new talent they brought from outside the UK, to get it all gelled so quickly and get it embedded really well into an effective team, that has surprised me. I thought they might struggle at least in the first few weeks just as they try to get it all together, but they've been absolutely flying, and another really good result for them on Saturday over Aston Villa has only pushed that even more for me.
Yeah, the same question to you, Andy. Is there any team that, particularly or negatively, so far this season?
Well, I mean, I tip Wolves to be up or there or thereabouts as the season kicked off. And Cardiff City doesn't surprise me, because we know Neil Warnock's record in this division. Sheffield United being up there has surprised me. And I think a few weeks ago, when we were looking to the season ahead, the guys on the show were expecting them to be sort of like just below mid-table, but not under any threat of relegation. They've done tremendously well. Also, Bristol City. Lee Johnson last season was under a bit of pressure. Some of his better players were sold. Obviously, Tammy Abraham hasn't come back again on loan, and you got to take your hat off to them. And with due respect, I didn't expect to see Preston North End up towards the top there. It was difficult to judge Alex Neil. He took Norwich up, and they came down, and they didn't quite get going last season to mount a serious promotion challenge. And he's gone over to Preston, and he's done a fantastic job there. And I'd actually say it's nice to see some of these clubs up there. You know, it's not the clubs that are just trying to buy the way to promotion. I know Wolves have spent a lot of money, But Aston Villa spent a lot, and they're still only just like hovering below the playoff zone. So I think Wolves will stay up there. The other teams, who knows? I mean, it's a funny old division, isn't it? I mean, Cardiff City were unbeatable a few weeks ago. We nearly snatched a win there. And then Birmingham City, who couldn't buy a win a few weeks ago under Harry Redknapp, did them on Friday night. So it's certainly very unpredictable, but, you know, once again, very interesting, and what a good division it is.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, you both sort of touched on it there, which actually sort of I didn't plan it that way, but takes me quite nicely into sort of the next topic. And it's sort of the Wolves situation. And obviously we both spoke about how they're sort of top of the table at the moment. And I wanted to sort of touch on sort of the agent, it seems, who, you know, is sort of heavily involved at Wolves, Mendes, George Mendes, sort of to come by his first name. I wanted to sort of get your thoughts on how sort of the clubs run. Obviously, when they had their old sort of chairman in place, Jez Moxey, it was sort of quite a well-run club, you know, didn't spend that much money compared to now. And I just wanted to get your thoughts really on how sort of their sort of style of running a football club has sort of impacted them. Obviously, they've brought in a lot of new players, and it seems that George Mendes is sort of central to all of that. Start with you first, Simeon, on this. Just wanted to get your thoughts on sort of how Wolves seem to be run these days.
I haven't been following it too closely, but just looking at it on a on a basic level, just spending so much money in such a short amount of time is a very it's a very unreliable way to go about building up your football club. It's very easy to spend all that money and bring in some really good players, but if they're coming in from really big clubs, I think coming in from some big clubs in Portugal, if I remember right, if success starts to sort of ebb away from Wolves, everything can start tumbling down. If they, say, have a really bad couple of months, are they really going to be able to motivate those players and get them up for a fight? I think a much better way of going about trying to get a team promoted in the long term is to build up the club behind the scenes. Things like bringing through young talent, bringing through people from the lower divisions who really want to fight for the club, who really see their long-term future with the club. What I'm worried about with Wolves is that they're spending all this money on players who might not want to play for the club if success starts to drop away.
Yeah, the same to you, Andy, really. Obviously, he's come in and he's sort of said himself he's responsible for most of the big deals that happen sort of Portuguese-wise, and that's really evident by sort of the players that Wolves have brought in. Just wanted to get your thoughts and sort of if that'd be something that you'd welcome at, say, Derby, for example.
Well, over at Derby, until earlier on this year, you'd have known Sam Rush was our chief executive. He had previously worked for the Wasserman Group, which is one of the biggest sports agencies in the world. They don't just deal with footballers, they deal with NFL players, basketball players, etc. And a lot of Derby's players, their agents came from the Wasserman Group. And Also, there's a coach at Derby, former academy player Ayrton Wassell, whose father is in charge of Derby's academy. Darren Wassell was or is employed as a coach by the club, but he's also employed as a scout by the Wasserman Group. And I do think there is a conflict of interest here. I don't think agents should be anywhere near any positions in a football club. I'm not a big fan of the agency business, the way it runs anyway. I mean, Brian Clough said back in his day there was only one agent, and that was James Bond. And he did with women what some agents do to complete football clubs. But I don't, I mean, there was an article in some of the daily newspapers about this at Wolves, questioning the relationship that he has with the club and also the agents, the agency that he's part of. And it's, you know, I'm not pointing any fingers or saying there's anything untowards happening, but it's always going to attract the attention of is he working in the interests of a club, or his main paymasters. And I personally think that nobody who's involved in the football agency business should be near a football club on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, sort of echoing what you said there, Andy, to be honest. Sort of, I was sort of when we were picking topics today, I sort of didn't know too much about George Mendes. Sort of heard his name mentioned around, and it was quite interesting to sort of read up about him and, you know, see the situation at Wolves. Obviously, one of his clients is the manager there. And then the Chinese owners now who've bought out Wolves also have a stake in Mendes's sort of agency. So it's definitely interesting. It does seem like there is, you know, a conflict of interest there. And I do think that, as you said, or as Simeon said, you know, these players that they are bringing in from Portugal, it's going to be interesting if, say, for example, they don't go up this season and there's been all that money spent, are they going to want to stick around? And then sort of you get to that stage then if he's involved and he is sort of acting as agents to these players, you know, what's his position going to be sort of come the summer if they don't get up? It does seem like they are sort of spending, you know, sort of obscene amounts of money to get that instant success. And then sort of if they do get to the Premiership.
Say there's a young striker in Europe and Wolves are interested in him, and some of their rival teams at the top of the table are interested in him. Is he going to act is he going to act fairly straight down the middle? Is he going to steer that player to Wolves, or is he going to think of his own pockets? You know, his own commission from the transfer. And that's why I'm not a big fan of football agents as it is. I don't think the game actually needs them. In fact, a lot of agents are ex-players anyway. You know, if they can negotiate deals on behalf of players, why couldn't they do it themselves when they were a player? You know, but I think football agents should be nowhere near football teams on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, definitely. I think there is obviously, as we've said, that conflict of interest. And I think, obviously, not a huge fan of football agents myself. Their sort of primary job should be to advise players, not be advising, you know, sort of the management and the owners of a club, especially when the owners also have a share in the agent sort of agency as well. So it will be interesting, you know, if they don't sort of get the success that they want this season, sort of what does happen over next summer, especially with sort of the players being linked to his agency as well. Is he going to be reluctant to sell them on, or, you know, it makes for sort of an interesting dynamic over sort of the next few months for Wolves, and it'll be interesting to see where it goes. Sort of from one Portuguese man now to another, and it's Carlos Carvajal at Sheffield Wednesday. Obviously, there's been a lot made about his future over sort of the last couple of weeks. They had a difficult game this weekend where they got beat by Bolton, and it was Bolton's first win in the season, so that sort of further piles the pressure on him. He's come close in the last couple of years to, you know, sort of getting him up. He's got them into the playoffs, and he's just fallen short. Obviously, Louis is sort of on this podcast as well, and we've sort of heard his thoughts about sort of Carlos Carvajal and how he, you know, should be given more time. I just wanted to get your thoughts and sort of with Carlos Carvajal, managers in general, do you think there is that sort of expectancy of immediate success now, or should managers be given more time?
Well, we've got Sheffield Wednesday next Saturday, so if they suffer a bad defeat at our place, maybe the axe will be dropping on him. I mean, I said at the start of the season, I know a lot of the guys on the podcast had tipped Sheffield Wednesday for automatic promotion, but they're just missing a little bit of something. Can't put my finger on it. I don't think Carlos can. But I don't know. I mean, unless they're dropping into the lower reaches and you can see no sign of them making a recovery and they're playing dreadful, I can understand that he's going to be shown the door. But he has proven that he can get them competing for promotion. They've come close a couple of times. And it can be foolish to sack them, you know, at this stage of the season. A very difficult one. He's brought a few players in there. But I did question him letting a player like Sam Winnell go out on loan to us. And he's taken Jacob Butterfield off us. I thank him for doing that, by the way, because Butterfield wasn't really giving us anything. But I think what they've got to do is have a look at the next two or three games. They need to be starting to pick up a little, you know, over the next two or three games. But hopefully it won't be on Saturday when we play them. But what you've also got to bear in mind, though, is when you go into sack a manager, have you any idea of what you're looking for when you're bringing a manager in? Because quite often snap decisions are made to bring in managers without sort of knowing what you're going to want out of them. You know, there's the typical management merry-go-round where you get certain characters in it. They go to a club for a year, 18 months. They have a little bit of success. Then it drops off, they get sacked, they pick up another job. And I think if the owner's there, if they're having doubts about Carlos now, they should be thinking about what sort of character they're wanting to be bringing in. But there you go.
Yeah, and the same to you, Simeon, really. It'd be interesting to get your thoughts on it. Sort of seeing on Twitter, there was sort of a little bit of pressure over sort of Yapstan. I don't know sort of how true that is. Sort of it'd be nice to get the Reading perspective on that. But yeah, your thoughts on Carlos Carvajal and then also sort of managers in general, should they be given more time?
I think it's way too early in the season at the moment to be talking about sacking someone who's taken Sheffield Wednesday to, I think, two playoff campaigns in the last two seasons. We're only about 12 games in, and just looking at the table, if they'd beaten Bolton at the weekend, they would have been up in 7th or 8th. They're in 12th, but one more win and it's 7th or 8th. It's just so tight at the moment. So one really bad result puts a lot more pressure on someone than is perhaps fair. But looking at his record, being able to consistently take Sheffield Wednesday to the playoff semi-finals, even if they're not winning those, we kind of, I think, underestimate that, considering how much success is coming from other teams and how some teams have had a lot of success one season and then collapse the next season. To be able to keep on doing that, I think, deserves a lot more respect than he perhaps gets. So give him a few more months. And if it's really clear that everything's going against him and he's losing momentum, he's losing the team and the fans, then yeah, think about sacking him. But I completely agree that the owners need to be thinking long and hard about what kind of manager they want to bring in instead, because it's really easy to sack someone. It's a lot harder to bring in the right choice who's going to build on what someone has already achieved. With regards to Yapstam, there was a bit more pressure after the opening 10 or so games when we'd only won about two games, but the win over Leeds has really eased that, and hopefully if we can get a few more wins in the next couple of games, then we'll go up the table and it should be fine.
Yeah, I completely agree with the 2 year there, as sort of, again, in terms of sort of Sheffield Wednesday's owners needing sort of a clear plan in mind. I'm a big sort of advocate of giving managers time and you know, letting them build. He's not been there sort of, you know, for 5-6 years and sort of not had any success. He's got them to the playoffs twice in the last 2 years, as Simeon mentioned, and it's, you know, it's a sort of a lottery, the playoffs. There's no guarantee with it. You can sort of play fantastically well all season and then sort of have an off week, and it undoes all that hard work that you've sort of done over the season. So I do think he should be given more time. I think if they are going to sort of ultimately get rid of him, I think just before the January transfer window would sort of probably be, if they want to do it this season, sort of the time to do it. You know, let a manager come in and sort of have a look at the squad, and then maybe bring in a couple of players sort of with the way he wants to play, and that suit obviously the way that the owners want them to be playing. But I do think, you know, he's been given a sort of an unfair amount of criticism so far this season. As Simeon said, you know, they were one win off, just been outside the playoffs, so it is too sort of early to be, you know, writing him off and calling for his head already. I think if you get to sort of Christmas time and, you know, they're down in sort of 13th, 14th, then maybe questions can start to be asked. But I do think at the moment it's far too early, and it's kind of lucky for them that they sort of, there's an interesting sort of fact with Preston over the last couple of years, and I think I should know the exact number, but I think 6 teams that we've beaten have ended up sacking their manager sort of after we've played them over the last 2 seasons, and we've already got Harry Redknapp sort of ultimately sat this season. So we seem to be sort of the team you want to avoid if you're sort of under pressure managerially. But, you know, I do think he should be given more time and, you know, review it again in sort of Christmas time, January, and see where they are then.
Can I just make a point here? Because, I mean, prior to our game at the weekend with Forest, there's a small minority in both camps here that are very restless as regards to the managers and what progress they're making. In Forest's case, they've had 5 years of no stability whatsoever, a trigger-happy chairman who is said to have actually interfered on the field. With ourselves, we've had so many seasons of playing in a certain style. The chairman has made errors in the past, but we've now brought in a manager who's got a totally different game plan to those previously. With Steve McLaren, he got us into the 4-3-3 pretty football. We had appointments at Paul Clement, was basically trying to tweak what McLaren did. Then we had Nigel Pearson, who came in. He did try and change things, but the way he went about them was perhaps under question. But what we've got now, we've got Gary Rowett, who went into Burton, he went into Birmingham, he had lean spells at both those clubs, but when he finally got the side shaped to how he wanted it to play, it was a success. And I think the Derby County fans have got to see this and give Gary Rowett 3 transfer windows minimum to do the job, because it is a different job. This is a different job to what Steve McLaren had. It's a different to when Paul Clement came in. It's not tweaking. This is about changing things. And the same at Forest as well, that they've had various managers. He's been chopping and changing. They've had transfer embargoes because of reckless spending. So, I mean, a lot of the previous managers to Warburton had their hands tied. Now, Warburton's come in. He did a good enough job when he was with Brentford, and I think their fans as well have got to show a little bit of him so he can build the team, because they're not a million miles off. They're very, very leaky in defence, but a couple of signings, you know, and in this division, you can be up there. But that's my general opinion anyway.
Yeah, I definitely agree that, you know, sort of managers should be given time. And it was sort of a shame when Grayson left us in the summer. But it seems that sort of recruitment-wise, we seem to have got it right. There was sort of that worry from me that, because we're only a couple of weeks before the start of the season, that we were, you know, just going to get anyone in for the sake of getting a manager in. But, you know, thankfully, even though it sort of happened quite quickly, it seems that Alex Neil's really settled to life with Preston, and, you know, we seem to have got it right sort of on our end. So it will be interesting, sort of, as we said, to see how sort of Carvajal does over the next few sort of months, and, you know, see where sort of Sheffield Wednesday are come sort of Christmas time. Just wanted to touch sort of last of all, just, you know, previewing next weekend's games. It's nice to be getting back into the swing of things again now after the international break. Start with you first, Simeon. Difficult looking game on paper going away to Sheffield United, who I don't think many people would have expected to start as well as they have done. Are you hoping for sort of another sort of away performance similar to the Leeds game this weekend?
Yeah, exactly. Just really want a organised, confident team to go up to Bramall Lane and hopefully just get a point, to be honest, because they're flying at the moment. And similar to Leeds, they've made a really good start to the season and just need to be making sure that they don't quite take their eye off the ball. It's really tough to preview it, to be honest, because if you looked at the start of the season at a team that's just come up from League One and have just kind of shot to the top of the table, it's hard to know how much staying power they've got, how long they're going to stay at the top of the table, or maybe they'll just slide down after an initial burst. But despite that, I'll be happy with a point if we can go up there and hopefully keep another clean sheet. That'd be excellent. Just something to build on that win at Leeds and prove that it wasn't just a fluke, basically.
Yeah, I do think it certainly will be a tricky game. They've really sort of turned it into a fortress there this season so far, and I think if they are to stay sort of near the top of the league, they need to be winning the home games. But, you know, hopefully for you, you can go there and sort of build on that momentum that you've taken from the Leeds game. Same to you now, Andy. As we mentioned, you've got Sheffield Wednesday, so both playing the Sheffield teams. You're at home, though, as opposed to away, so how do you see the game going?
I'm looking forward to it. They always make plenty of noise, their fans do. How do we see it? I think we will win. I don't think it'll be a very high-scoring game. I can see us sneaking a 1-0 or a 2-1 win. I think what Gary Rowett will do, he'll see that they've had some poor results lately, and he will aim to capitalise on that, get at them straight away, and send them home miserable. I think we beat them 2-0 last year, but we were very, very lucky. We had a couple of refereeing decisions which went our way, but I'm confident now that Rowett can get the lads pumped up, ready, and put more pressure on poor old Carlos.
Yeah, I do think, sort of as you said, it'll be sort of a low-scoring game, and it will be sort of interesting to see how the game plays out. Obviously, they're coming on the back of a defeat to Bolton, and you're coming sort of winning the sort of the game at the weekend. So I think sort of momentum is definitely with you, and it will be sort of interesting to see, you know, how much pressure is on Carlos Carvajal come the end of the 90 minutes. Preston, though, we've got another difficult away game. There's obviously no sort of easy games in this league, but we've sort of had a start from hell, really, which sort of makes the start we've had all the more better. We're away at Wolves, who, you know, are flying at the top of the table at the moment. And I think it really sort of hits home how we could have done with holding on to that 3 points at Fulham. If you'd have said, you know, 3 points or one win out of these two away games, you know, you probably would have taken it. Fulham and Wolves away, you know, both tricky places to go. But I think if we can get another draw here, you know, I think I sort of wouldn't be too disappointed with that. Obviously, they're flying at the moment and, you know, we want to sort of stay up and around those playoff places, and it is so tight at the moment that, you know, the odd point here and there, sort of at tricky away games like this, will sort of be crucial sort of come the end of the season. So I can see us sort of getting beat, even though I shouldn't say that. Sort of I'll get a lot of sort of abuse off other Preston fans who listen to this podcast. But with the way we've played, you know, over the last few weeks, playing people like Cardiff and Birmingham and getting great results against them, there's no reason why we can't go to Wolves and get a point or possibly nick a win. Sort of, if I was going to make sort of a bold score prediction, I'd say we'll draw 1-1. But I do think it'll be sort of one of our most difficult games this season so far, so it will be interesting to see sort of how the game plays out. But with that, we're out of time. If you two want to let everyone know where they can find you and sort of any work that you're involved in, that would be a good time.
I'm Simeon Pickup. I'm on Twitter at Bucks Royal, and I'm also editor of the Tarhurst End, which is a Reading-focused blog, website and podcast. And we cover all the news, lots of opinion and analysis, match previews, match reports, everything. So go check it out.
Andy Buckley-Taylor on Twitter, at BuckTaylor64, and a blog for the Derbyshire Times group of newspapers.
Yeah, and as I said at the start, you can follow me on Twitter, @_JamesVickers. That's my Twitter. I also write for a Preston North End fan blog, which is @DeepdaleDigest. And then something that I'm quite proud of, over the last week, I managed to interview Colin Murray, who is the host of the Football League Highlights show on Channel 5. You can find that interview pinned at the top of my Twitter page, which is @_JamesVickers. And it's also posted on the EPL Index Twitter page as well. So definitely give that a check out and let me know what you think. We sort of talk everything from the making of the Football League show to covering his beloved Liverpool, and also how well Northern Ireland have done of getting to the World Cup playoff. So it's definitely worth a listen, and let me know what you think of it. But yeah, as I said, we're out of time with that, so thank you for joining me today, guys, and we'll see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.